Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. You're listening to a new Redefining Security podcast. Have you ever thought that we are selling cybersecurity insincerely, buying it indiscriminately, and deploying it ineffectively? Perhaps we are. So let's look at how we can organize a successful InfoSec program that integrates people, process, technology, and culture to drive growth and protect business value. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. HITRUST is a leading data protection standards development and certification organization that strives to safeguard sensitive information and manage information risk for global organizations across all industries and throughout the third-party supply chain. Learn more at HITRUSTAlliance.net. Purpose-built for securing Active Directory, Semperis delivers first-of-its-kind solutions to address the entire lifecycle of a directory attack. Finding and fixing security vulnerabilities, intercepting privilege escalation and persistence, and quickly responding to cyber attacks. Learn more at Semperis.com.
Marco.
Sean.
Do you hear it?
I hear what? The change coming?
Well, hopefully this is... Yeah, if there's a problem with this, you definitely want to change it. But if it's in good working order, you don't want to change it. That's a heartbeat. You want that thing to be pretty consistent.
So I'm kind of guessing you're talking about humans.
We're talking humans. But the other part of the conversation is the business also has a heartbeat in their culture. And you want that to be in a rhythm that makes sense for your organization, right?
Yeah, but this is redefining security. So, you know, it's all about technology. I get a magic pill, I push a button, there is some blinking light and everything is going to be resolved because technology is just going to help us all.
Exactly.
Or not.
Forget the humans. They don't matter. No, I mean, think about it. The humans, the employees, they're the heartbeat of the company. And guess what? They are human and they have a heart as well, right? And they drive the culture. And so if they're not in a good position, if they're not healthy, the culture is going to suffer.
And
I would imagine.
Security.
That's my guess, but I don't know. So guess what we're going to do here? We're going to find out with somebody who does.
And it's somebody that we haven't seen in a while. We're very excited to have a conversation all the way on the other side of the world.
I know. Thrilled to have our good friend, Janan Beck. Welcome.
Hi, everybody. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, it's morning and evening or afternoon.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Hi. Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Everywhere. Everyone.
I love
everywhere.
How you said
Hello.
All the way in Australia because no one knows where anybody is right now. It doesn't matter.
Well, as they say, it's a happy hour somewhere in the world.
That's right.
That's
happy
right.
Happy hour. Exactly. You know where your employees are.
Yeah. Talking about changes that we have been to go through this year and how it doesn't matter really anymore. But what matters again, it's culture. That always matter. It matters in society, it matters in our community, in our family, in education, and definitely in security. And we know that you had conversations about this, you've done some research. But before we get there, a little bit about yourself to tell our audience who you are.
Yeah.
For those that don't know who you are.
Yes. So I lead security and risk research for Asia Pacific here at Forrester. I've been in cybersecurity for a little bit too long than I care to mention. I think 20 plus years. I have always, as soon as I entered the profession, I knew I wanted to do something to do with people or business, which 20 plus years ago in security didn't make sense. You could be either a pen tester or you can be a policy person. And there was really no spectrum in between. So it's just been so interesting for me to see how my career progressed and where I've taken that. I've been a practitioner before joining Forrester as the Director for Cyber Strategy at Transport for New South Wales, Qantas Airlines before that. I've worked for the Big Four. I've done quite a lot. So very excited about my career, and I love where it's taken me. I love that we can sit here and have this conversation about people in security and have it meaningfully in a non-fluffy way, because I really, really think it's the most important and the most neglected part of this conversation.
Yep, absolutely. Let's get rid of the fluff. The feather is tickling my nose.
Yeah.
It makes me want to sneeze. Now, in all seriousness, I mean, I was joking about the heartbeat, but the reality is the people make the business, and the security professionals drive security culture. And it's easy to think about them as their own little department, and they're kind of squirreled away in an office or part of the building somewhere, and they don't interact with people because their heads are down looking at screens all day. It's beyond that, right? So they, yeah. Hopefully they're doing more to drive awareness and understanding, but they also need to be given an environment that allows them to grow and succeed and be productive and feel good about the work that they're doing in support of the business. So tell us a little bit about some of the research you've done there about the environment, the people, and the culture that all drives.
There's just, as you were speaking, Sean, there's so much there in that little piece. So let's start with that perception that security are basement dwellers, hoodie wearers, punishers, that kind of sit there isolated from the business. That perception is sadly still well alive. And I know that a lot of the time we use the words of gone are the days when we are in it. They haven't really gone, unfortunately. The perception is still very much there. And I think, sadly, in many instances, there is that reality. And there is that reality, I think, because we shy away from a few things. And I'm gonna touch on them. We shy away from people. We shy away from politics. So I'm gonna cover a little bit of that. But I want to start with what is and why this is important and why we need to give the people aspects more focus. So when I look at our data, one of the survey questions I inserted into our Forrester research was, what, as a security leader, what do you spend your day doing? And I gave them a number of options, such as security awareness and training, building strategy, business case, engaging with stakeholders, and security technical and operational activities. Guess what percentage of a security leader's time is spent doing security and technology? Anyone want care to take a guess?
You want a number?
15. I can only count to 5.
Well, Marco, you're close. It's actually 13% spent doing technology and security. So the rest of the time has got something to do with people. And in an interview that I did with a CISO a few months ago, he very gently reminded me, and I should know this, like this is my coverage area, that security is a very emotional topic. It's emotional for everybody. You ask your grandmother about it, you ask your CEO, you ask your son. Everybody has some kind of an emotion about it. So the thing with all of this data that I've just presented you with and that particular anecdote is that you can either ignore this fact and, you know, we just keep on trotting along as we are and not training ourselves in the people aspect, or we can be a little bit more conscious about it. I know I was talking to one of the vendors also a few months ago, and he said with culture, we're always building culture. Like this conversation, we're building a culture of sorts. You are at the water cooler, you write an email, you are building culture. So you as a security professional, as a security leader, can either sleepwalk into that culture. Or again, you can acknowledge it and just get really methodical about how you're going to build it.
And that's been the problem, right? I mean, we go back to when we started ITSP Magazine, and even before that, the conversation that Sean and I were having about tech talking tech. tech people talking to tech people, and everybody else just didn't understand, and we need to protect everybody without changing things, and nobody needs to worry about it. Well, I think a few years later, now it's pretty clear that we all need to worry about it.
Yeah.
Right? And well, with that, many consequences.
Right, Marco? I mean, you said emotion, right? Or emotional. And I think certainly we have that in our personal lives, but even in business, right? We get excited when we close that deal. We get excited when we see the CEO on national television talking about the problem they're solving. Equally, on the converse side, we feel angst and pressure and other emotions. I'm not going to go through the full list of the potential of a ransomware attack or the potential for a breach of intellectual property or whatever it might be. There are those feelings as well. So how, in the research you've done, what are you seeing in terms of the emotions? I don't know if you pulled on any of those strings.
I haven't pulled on too many strings in emotions, and it's really interesting. I feel with emotions, when I go to dive in, so I'm going to, talking about emotions, I will cover a little bit of our research on toxicity in cybersecurity. Because, you know, it's so interesting when you're talking a heartbeat, quite often in my presentations, I will close with a heart and the heart, the middle of it, the beating thing, and that is the security team. So you can, and my hypothesis is you can work as hard as you wanted to engage with the stakeholders, the CEO, the business leaders, the business executives, your customers on security. But if your heartbeat isn't working, if your people aren't working, if your team isn't working, you're stuffed. When I kicked off accidentally my research on toxicity in cybersecurity last year. And I say accidentally because I knew I wanted to cover it, but I only wanted to write one bullet about it in a big report on retaining cybersecurity talent. The more I interviewed people, the more I thought, oof, I just need to grab onto this a little bit more. I'm not asking the right questions. There's something not working with the way I'm approaching this. I put a question out on LinkedIn about toxicity in cybersecurity, about why is this so prevalent in our industry. And talking of emotion, oh my goodness, the comments that poured in, the likes, the reshares, the private messages, the text messages, it was so filled with emotion. It was so filled with sadness, anxiety, angst. There was so little hope that I myself, I remember I had to, this was at the very beginning of the pandemic, those beginning, you know, the April, May timeframe. So it was already quite a tough time. And I remember having to take a step back and go, that's quite a lot of emotion to deal with. So we have all these people in our industry feeling all these negative things. And it's really interesting because whilst all of that dynamic and all these people have experienced toxicity and bullying and harassment and sexism and racism and ageism, I feel like I work also in this beautiful industry where we can have these amazing conversations and there's all these beautiful people. So there's real dichotomies happening in terms of emotion. But anyway, to cut a very long story short, I think I'm at a point now, even when I'm going to release my survey on this topic of toxicity, there's going to be some kind of not a disclaimer, but to suggest that people go and see somebody if their emotions are triggered with some of the conversations that we end up having. That's the level of emotion that we're going to. Why am I not delving into it? Because I'm not a psychologist. So I'm kind of, you know, I feel like I'm revealing all these things and I'm coming across all these things, and I need to be very careful in how I speak about them and in how I approach them so I can be the most helpful to our field.
Yeah, and I think it's about opening the eyes and starting the conversation, right? And then, as you said, there are experts that can help with that. But if we just bottle in everything, like I feel like in this industry I've been doing for a very long time, talk about diversity, talk about entering in the industry and toxicity and all of this, again, it goes back to companies are made of people and there is one say that I like to bring up a lot. We use it in advertising, but your brand is not what you think it is what people think it is.
Yes.
So is that perception. And so you can say, oh, my company is great. We're open. We're diverse. We care about the mental health of people. But if people don't feel that way, it's not, right? So that's where culture is. And the thing about culture, and I want you to, your opinion on this is, obviously, it's not something that, again, you just decide, oh, starting tomorrow, we change our culture. No, it doesn't.
It's quite a journey. It's not a miracle.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the importance of that? I mean, what are the steps? What did you find out in, and what is wrong with this, the culture that we have for a long time?
I think, you know, not necessarily that there's something wrong with it, but definitely we've not approached it methodically. So when I talk about steps, like when people want to get really specific about steps, it's four basic ones. So number one, identify the stakeholders, identify the people. Who are those people that we're talking about? And it's really interesting because quite often when we have these conversations, people's mind goes straight to the employees and straight to security awareness and training. Super important part of it, but it is by no means the whole picture. You've got your board and your executives. And from them, so once you define your stakeholders, you need to understand the behaviors that they currently exhibit and what you actually want from them. So you've got the boards and executives, and from them, you want advocacy more than anything. Yep, you want them to change some security behaviors, but ultimately you want advocacy. Let's not kid around with that. You want them to understand your risk profile, to support your budget, to advocate for you, to make sure that the business is doing what you need them to do. You've got the business leaders and the technology leaders, and from them, you need buy-in. And you need buy-in at a very practical level of allowing you and working with you to implement some of your security programs, such as DLP, such as Zero Trust, such as privacy, whatever it is. But you need buy-in, you need close relationships. You need them to say, yep, we can, you know, we can give you that window to do patching or whatever it is. Then you've got your employees, a very important part, and that is then certain behaviors. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And last but not least, of course, you've got the customers. So that is something we have not typically thought of when we think of people, but our customers, we can influence them to adopt positive security practices. And we can use our security posture to brand ourselves with those customers. Like, why aren't we thinking about that? I know financial services think about that. Quite strongly, but the rest of us have not necessarily extended the people to customers. So that's step one, the people, who are they? Step two, the behaviors. What are the behaviors that you want to change? I have gotten to know over the years a startup in the UK called Cybsafe, who have crowdsourced a database called SebDB, the security behavior database, and they list all of these different security behaviors and link them to risk. So, you know, go through and identify, what do you want to change? What do you want them to change? Do you want them to adopt password managers? Do you want them to not send emails to themselves? So all of that stuff. So that's step two. Step three is where typically most people start, and that is, okay, well, let's work out how to correct this. What processes do we need to fix? What awareness initiatives do we need to do? And even then, the advice currently is, if you should be doing some kind of awareness and training, make it transformational. People are so fed up with that boring 1 hour long tick in the box, let's train ourselves in security. There are so many cool things out there. So in my research, I went a step further and I created 10 design principles to make these awareness initiatives transformational. And they include things such as behavioral nudges, using humor and fun, macro and nano learning. There's all sorts of cool things out there. There's you can use inclusive messaging, imagery. That doesn't sound transformational, but sadly for our industry is, because we love locks and keys and things that really induce anxiety. And then finally, the fourth step, again, in the spirit of making it methodical and keeping it, you know, as a program, as a journey, then it's the measurement piece.
Yeah, I love that framework. And I'm wondering, it can't be, now perhaps the people in it and the work that the people do in information security is different from marketing, right?
Yes.
We can probably say that.
Yes, we can.
But understanding, regardless of what we're learning about them, having an understanding of who they are and what they do and why they do that and what matters to them and how that supports a company shouldn't be unique to cybersecurity. So I'm wondering, I don't know if it's in the research or perhaps even in some of the conversations you had, are there parallels we can draw upon from other business units? And the one that comes to mind initially is legal, right? They have a lot of the same objectives in terms of defining how an organization should operate in a safe manner, right? Not from an attack perspective, but from an agreement or contractual perspective. So I don't know if that's a good example, or do you have any examples where we can say this culture works and we've seen it work here, and this is why?
I think physical safety is really, really good parallel. And I think having worked at somewhere like Qantas and later transport, when you look at safety culture, it is phenomenal. It's really interesting. I'm actually currently writing this research that I've been writing for 3 years, and it's just can't get off my desk about the ethics of punishing people for cybersecurity breaches. So if they've committed an error, or if they've fallen too many times for phishing simulation exercises, you know, we just love to punish people. And my suggestion is, look, there might be more positive ways to deal with this. And the amount of people who have now written to me saying we need to take a leaf out of safety cultures and how they build their culture, it's really interesting. One of the positive things they do is they have safety leaderboards, and they celebrate safety successes, and they compare, hey, look, you know, our department versus this department, these are the number of incidents. And it's really interesting. I do think we've got quite a lot to learn from how organizations have built a safety culture. And, you know, they've been, for safety culture, that didn't happen overnight. 100 years ago, there were airplane crashes. There were a lot more accidents on building sites. And now, like certainly in countries such as where we are, Australia and the US, that's it's more of a rarity than standards. So that's happened via building a safety culture.
And I'm wondering, as a follow-up to this, Janan, do we have a sense of what the drivers were for that? And can those also be applied? Because I know in the US, there's things like OSHA where they're going to come down on you if you're not following the safety guidelines. And so one way to get the employees to follow safety guidelines is some of these practices. But I'm wondering, that's OSHA might be a driver, but are there others, like you're just going to make more money and have happier people or anything?
No,
like
I mean, sadly in safety, it was deaths, right? And that's kind of where in my earlier career especially, I struggled in drawing the parallel between cybersecurity or information security or IT security, as it was called at the time, and safety, because safety was very much about death. Like you can't really afford to have incidents or many incidents or certain level of impact incidents. What's really interesting is that we are now moving to a world where cybersecurity and technology is embedded into everything that we do, that there are now those physical safety concerns. So if there is interference, for example, with the operations of an airline, or of a train, or of a hospital, then the impact is it is human lives. When you were talking about ransomware earlier, they've got the potential to cripple entire cities, entire critical infrastructure. Not only do they have the potential, but they have. So I think now that we're starting to move into that world, unfortunately, that's a driver. You know, we would all love to sit here and live in our rosy rainbow world of, you know, we're going to be proactive and we're going to build that. But unfortunately, some of that gets built for us. Some of those drivers happen for us.
I think this is a conversation, of course, that it goes, when you talk about culture, you go behind security. You go back and look at the history and how human think and society think. So as you're talking about saving lives, I go back in time, let's say, I don't even want to go to the slavery of the Romans, but Victorian Industrial Revolution, they didn't care about lives at the time. People were dying in the manufacture all the time. It was just the cost of doing business, right? So I don't want to be negative here. I'm going to be positive.
It's just too early for me to
listen, I'm getting somewhere.
Where'd you take us, Mark?
The positive is that eventually the culture got us value a certain principle that it took a long time to get there, but yes, we got there, okay?
Yep.
When you present a concept that is abstract, so you're not looking at saving life per se, but indirectly you do, because the malware can hit the hospital, the malware can hit families and welfare and quality of life in a lot of things, infrastructure that got attacked by cyber criminal, yeah, and so on. So I'm talking about a long process, what I yep. said at the beginning, culture doesn't change in a day. And yep. sometimes doesn't change in a century. That's why I went all the way back there.
I want to look at the future. In my airlines example. Absolutely. So
what I want to drive with this as we're starting to wrap this conversation is a vision maybe for the future of knowing that we're not there. There are issues. There are still problems, but we're working on it. They're becoming more ethical into the way we look at things. I know that there are positive aspects in what you've seen.
There's definitely, and I think, look, the positive aspects is, first of all, we've talked about this. I think call some of those things, name them. I think one of the ways to solve a problems, obviously we've got to come up with a solution, but the very first way is to actually name it and to acknowledge that it is a problem. And I think we are doing this. Be methodical about it and be patient with yourself. I think there's a significant element, and one of the words that really started rising to the surface last year, as we saw how different leaders led the pandemic and how some of them succeeded and some of them failed abysmally, the word empathy, empathetic leadership. And I think empathy here, like if I were to go a little deeper into that heartbeat and at the very, very, very center of that heart, it is all about empathy. So once you start understanding the people, once you start listening, it's, again, I mentioned at the beginning that we're afraid of politics, but actually when you think about politics and start removing some of that emotion that we talked about, the process of politics is actually listening to objection and trying to help the other person overcoming that objection, working towards a win-win. It's not the ugly thing that we see on television. That's politics. And then with that comes empathy. So I think for me, I don't know what the future is going to look like. I have no idea, to be honest. But I think if I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but if we all adopt that thing of empathy, because ultimately, at the end of the day, people don't care how much you know, but they know how much you care. And if you can take that approach with everything, we've seen it play out last year. We've seen Jacinda Ardern be named one of the top 50 leaders in the world by, I actually don't know which publication it was. That's what's going to win the day ultimately.
Yeah, and as we wrap here, Janana, I'm going to go back to, I think you said a lot of people start at step three, which is taking action to fix something. And
yeah.
And I think maybe my final point, and maybe you can summarize it at the end better than I, is that if you don't recognize what the problem is and have an understanding of what you're trying to accomplish, that problem is preventing you from doing, saving lives. Starting at step three is simply, I'm going to guess that it's throwing some security awareness training technology into the mix and hoping that fixes things.
Yeah.
When you might put a Band-Aid on a particular problem, but not solve the root cause of the culture that you really want to achieve.
Yeah.
You can't. So maybe as a closing thought with that in mind, what do we do? An advice for the executive leadership members who need to, let's say, recognize, take a step back, think about their culture. What do they need to recognize?
So I think for me, they need to be really clear about their stakeholder map, really, really understand the people. Spend that time upfront. Nothing, like you said, Sean, nothing can flow on if you haven't done that. That you can't just tick the box and keep on buying, because then security awareness and training products, for example, become just another one of those things that we put in our security shopping basket and not have enough people to operate, annoy the business, all of those things. Reframe how you think of politics. Politics is not a dirty word. It doesn't have to be. At least you can do it with ethics, you can do it with integrity, so long as you go into it with that position of empathy. Really, really hone in on the levels of toxicity within your team and within yourself. I know from my conversations, I've had people come out and go, oh, maybe I am the brilliant jerk. Maybe I am the cause of toxicity. I've had to think about that myself. Be planful. And I think most importantly, really, really identify those harder soft skills of empathy, of communication, and work on them. We all have gaps.
Yeah, a lot of in the mirror reflection there.
Yes.
Yep, a lot to think about, and to go back to the idea that it takes time, but it takes will as well. I think that, as you say, you put people at the heart of security, and I think just that you can't just patch people the way you patch a software. It's not that easy. It's like, oh, let me re-upload it, the version 2.3. The culture is a process, and I think it's important. These conversations are very important so that we can think about it. Every day in everything we do, we can think about it. We may not have an answer, but maybe we start noticing things that we wouldn't notice before. Mm. So, Jinan, thank you so much. Always a pleasure talking to you and seeing you. This is a podcast, so people don't get that pleasure. But, you know, we
at this hour of the morning.
Well, you know, I miss running it, you know, in the street at the conference or in the hall. So hopefully
next year.
We're human. We need that, right?
We do.
We need that too. Thank you so much.
We do. Thank you so much.
Purpose-built for securing Active Directory, Semperis delivers first-of-its-kind solutions to address the entire life cycle of a directory attack. Finding and fixing security vulnerabilities, intercepting privilege escalation and persistence, and quickly responding to cyber attacks. Learn more at Semperis.com. HITRUST is a leading data protection standards development and certification organization that strives to safeguard sensitive information and manage information risk for global organizations across all industries and throughout the third-party supply chain. Learn more at HITRUSTALLIANCE.net. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Redefining Security Podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.